Welcome to the podcast for Boomer Women, where we are embracing the journey. I'm your host, Agnes Knowles. I have a background in fitness, as in certified fitness instructor. I was never keen on that word, fitness. It sounded like work and like there was a threshold you had to cross to qualify. I preferred wellness, activity, more holistic terms than the focus on the physical. My guest today is of a similar mind. As individuals, we all have personal abilities, skills, needs, and those all need to be considered when talking physical wellness. Laura has worked with older adults for more than 20 years, providing fitness training and yoga instruction in both commercial health clubs and retirement communities. Like many of us, she came to the field by a circuitous route, but is certainly leaving her mark. Listen now to my conversation with Laura Dow. Usually use this intro to explain why my guest is going to bring you some info you want or need to know. Today, it's all about me, as I sit at my current pet sit on a metal chair with a pillow under my butt, stretching from time to time because I'm sleeping around. You did hear the pet sit part, didn't you? And while my current bed is comfortable enough, I sleep wedged between one large dog and two small ones. Those of you with little sympathy might tell me to close them out. Yep, did that the other night, and they barked most of the night until sanity dictated that I open the door again. I know sleeping around is a choice right now. I know it's hit and miss with the beds I get. I also have a background in fitness, so should be able to heal myself. But like I said, it's all about me today, and I need to talk to Laura. She has worked with us older adults for over 20 years, and just for me, I'm sure she called her company Stiff to Fit. Laura Dow, welcome to the podcast for Boomer Women, where we are embracing the journey.
Thank you so much, Agnes. And I'm very sorry to hear that you're having some physical issues, and I'd be happy to focus completely on you.
No, we're not really going to focus completely on me. That's all right. Now, you are preaching to the choir today. But this choir member has gone from climbing the mountain every Saturday morning to climbing out of bed every morning really slowly, all within a couple of months. Tell me I'm not that unusual.
You're not that unusual. No, I
Oh, this is going to be a long
mean,
podcast.
whatever you may be feeling, we want to look at what's happened in your past. And I'm talking the immediate past because you just said to me an important thing. You said a couple of months ago, I was climbing the mountain and today I'm climbing out of bed. And, there's something's happened. So that's where we want to spend some time is what's happened. And yes, you do have a background in fitness. Sometimes the worst clients we can have is ourselves. So, yeah, so please keep talking, keep sharing.
Okay, well, I'm going to let you talk first. What brought you to fitness?
Oh my goodness. So I have my own personal journey in fitness. Back when I was prior to my fitness career, I was a professional musician in Boston, and I was in unhappy places in my life, mostly personally. Professionally, things were going well. And we have diabetes and obesity in my family, along with some other things in several generations past. And I weighed at that point north of 225 pounds. And I'm a small woman. I'm about 5'3". So that I did not manage that weight very well. And as a musician, I knew that I was in breathing was important. And clearly all of that extra breathing, all of that extra weight, excuse me, was not helping the breathing, which was not helping I'm a flutist, was not helping my flute playing. So long story short, I started on my own personal health. I was pre-diabetic at that point, and with the history in my family thing, and I was in my mid-40s, early 40s then, and I hired a trainer finally. I hired a therapist, I hired a nutritionist. I really spent some time and some money and some energy on me and tried to get to the bottom of why I wasn't giving grace and kindness to myself when I was giving grace and kindness to my flute students and to my friends and to my family. So that was really a big turning point in my life on a lot of levels. And then fast forward, I moved out to California after I left my marriage and needed to work. And unfortunately, the music scene at the time was not conducive to my reestablishing myself. in the East Coast. I lived in the East Coast at that point in Boston. There was a community music school on every corner. When I went to California, there was not a community music school on every corner, and the musicians were sort of struggling, and I was not able to reestablish myself. So I started working in a women's only gym. Just like front desk stuff, I wasn't in fitness at that point, although I was very serious about my own health and exercising. And they saw that I had kind of a knack with the ladies. The ladies were always asking me because they heard about my journey. They was always asking me questions. And I was like, well, this is my journey. I don't have anything professional to tell you, but this is what I did. And the owners, two women friends who were owners of the club, said, you need to become a personal trainer and do personal training at our club. And I said, oh. And they said, we'll pay for it. I said, oh, sign me up. And that started the whole journey. And that was in 2004, 2004 to 2005 that happened. And 20 years later, here I am.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, it's interesting how, sometimes life hands you a gift and yeah, you just take it and say thank you. Oh, that's great. Now, are you still in California then, or are you back on the
I
East
am
Coast?
not. I'm in the Washington, D.C. area. I moved to Washington, D.C. For graduate school, which was another situation that didn't really pan out for me. And I segued back into, I came to come to school full time to Washington, D.C. And so wasn't doing any personal training. And then when I realized that graduate school at 49 was not for me, I went back to personal training and reestablished my career pretty easily in Washington, D.C. And that's where I am now.
Okay, good, good. Okay, you've written a book, and we're going to get to the book later on. But there's a ton of fitness videos out there. There's a kajillion books. My biggest complaint about most of them is that you don't really know whether the instructor, and yes, I just used air quotes, has any real education or credentials. Is that what you've noticed?
Yes and no. What I've done, particularly on social media, because a lot of my clients will look on social media and say, well, in my reels, I saw this, that, and the other thing. And after I get done rolling my eyes, then we talk about what the client saw. A lot of the, and I'm going to use air quotes, a lot of the influencers, yeah, no, not so much. But I've been able to find some really good people to follow, people who are physical therapists, people who've been in fitness for a really long time. And there's something about having longevity in the industry that is somewhat unusual. Anybody who's been in the industry knows that, you can go in full of bright ideas and, you're all excited and passionate. And then you realize that the actual business of what you're doing is pretty difficult and hard to make a living unless it's just you that you're supporting. And even then, it's a little hard to make a living. And so people tend to cycle in and out of fitness as a career. It's a hard business in a lot of ways. You have to train or teach classes when the members are available, not on your schedule, but when the members are available. And that can be early mornings, late evenings, holidays, times when you might like to be off. And you just have to understand that that's part of the business. So that's a segue too. I have found people to follow that I admire and respect. LinkedIn is a great source of reputable people. I've hooked up with and connected with a lot of people on LinkedIn that I really respect all around the world, and that's been a blessing. The other forms of social media, I'm a little less active on. So I hope that answers your question a little bit.
Yeah, basically what you've just said to everybody is check who you're watching,
Absolutely.
and
You really
yeah.
do need to vet, like, where is this person coming from? I myself, my education is in music and liberal arts. I have a little bit of education, on the college, on the graduate school level, in health promotion and a little bit in clinical physiology, but I do not have an undergraduate degree. I don't feel like that's a detriment. I've been in the field for 20 years and I stay on top of my CECs, which are our continuing ed credentials that we have to maintain. And you try to stay on top of the research that's coming out and follow people who are even more on top of the research than I am so that I can see, what the trends are and educate myself because the field changes. When I entered in 2004, 2005 to now, the field has changed pretty significantly. So you have to continue to understand what the trends are because they'll say one thing one time, like 10 years ago, and then it's completely opposite now. And that's one of the reasons I wrote the book is because people are inundated with information that changes fairly regularly. So like they want to give up, and I don't want them to give up. So I also have to continue to educate myself.
Right. Okay, I opened by whining about my current physical situation. But what are the most common complaints or ailments you hear from older adults?
Wow. Well, we need a couple of days. But I mean, I think the most common ones are probably the orthopedic ones, arthritis, number one, joint issues. I have a lot of clients that have had knee replacements or are looking at knee replacements, hip replacements. I've got a client next month that's having a shoulder replacement. I mean, these are big operations that have mostly good outcomes if people do the rehab that they're supposed to do and there aren't complications. So I say orthopedic for sure. Obviously, people have the gamut of issues in their lives, cancer and heart disease and diabetes. We all know that exercise helps a lot mental health issues. Those are not necessarily physical issues, but can impact your physical being. So, people have stuff. You don't live a long life or live to the ages that we are and not have stuff, whatever it is. And then it's working with the stuff as best you can to continue to live your life the way that you want to, if possible, and how the movement part or the physical activity piece fits into that.
Which is my segue into the fact that I think we both espouse the same basic thing of movement. You don't have to be at the gym every day. You don't have to, like do 400 push-ups or like any of that sort of stuff. Keep moving. And I still lead an exercise class for older women. And, we talk about the ADLs, the activities of daily living. So if you're in a house with stairs, you got to be able to climb the stairs. If you've got tall cupboards in the kitchen, you need to be able to reach above your head. Grandchildren, putting them into a car seat or lifting them out of a high chair, that sort of thing. And then one of the saddest stories that I can tell is this amazing, lovely woman who did have a lot of arthritis, but she had to take a driver's test for her advanced years. And because of the arthritis, could not do her shoulder check and she had her license taken away. So,
Horrible.
yeah. And, so as I say, activities of daily living, talk to us where you come from in terms of your
Yeah, well,
movement.
I completely agree with what you're saying. A lot of my clients, and I'm now, I started out in one place when I started out professionally in fitness because I worked in a commercial big box gym. And so I was kind of inundated with sort of, am I allowed to say this sort of bro mentality? Because I was the one of very few females and I was one of the oldest by far in that gym. And so, the mentality was always harder, harder, push more, do more, lift more. And, so I was surrounded by that, but I learned pretty fast that my female clients, because I always had older females in my clientele, and now I sort of specialize exclusively in older females. I have a couple of older men, but it's always been older adults, really since day one. They don't like the word fitness. It turns them off. And I completely understand that and agree with it at this point that we really want to look at the movement you're doing in your life. We want to look at your physical activities. What do you need in order to live the life that you want to be living? And how do we cope or how do we adapt to any special circumstances you might have in your life, like an illness or like an orthopedic issue? Because things can be modified and things can be adapted. So, I also tend to really encourage people to consider the variety of movement that they have in their life. Like sometimes people think, oh, all I need to do is yoga. All I need to do is Pilates. Oh, I walk. That's enough. And, it's great that people do those things. I never want to discourage someone from doing an activity like that, but it's not the only thing. And I would say that the strength training part and the balance part are also two really, really key elements of someone's movement and physical activity. So all of those things, the weight training, stretching mobility, mental health, and the balance is what's going to, those things as a combination are what's going to help you to stay in your home or to be active the way that you want to be active. And I try to have a very specialized approach when I work with my clients because they're individuals. They're unique individuals. And each one of them lives their lives a little bit differently than the other. And therefore, I can't just give them, an exercise just because everybody else is doing it. That's, I mean, they might need some basic exercising, but it also needs to be tailored to their lives and to what they want, and also what they like. That's important too, because if I try to give someone an exercise that I think is helpful for them, but they hate it, that's a no-win situation. So I need to step up and figure out a way of having them do some kind of movement like that that they're not going to hate, or we just eliminate it. Because if you're going to fight against the thing that's supposed to help you, that's a bad situation. And then the person that's trying to, I don't want to use the word push, but the person who's trying to encourage you to do the thing you hate, you're going to associate the thing you hate with that person. So now I've lost my effectiveness. So that's kind of a bad situation. But yeah, I like a lot of variety and I like to stay away from words like fitness. I like the word strong. Women that I work with tend to really enjoy and like the feeling of strength after the fact. They don't always like the process of getting stronger, but they like when they can lift their grandchild out of that high chair without hurting their back, when they can lift, a big jug of water or a big carton of orange juice or whatever it is they're lifting, or when they can put the luggage in the overhead compartment without hurting themselves. They get very proud of themselves as well. They should.
I'm just thinking of all the different things that we do in my class. And balance, I must admit, is one of the, to me, one of the most important, because as people get older, I mean, how many times do you read about somebody or hear that, somebody fell, and invariably it's loss of balance, or balance could have helped them. So I know the women in my class have, I think, a love-hate relationship with me, because we all have chairs, so you can keep your fingers on the chairs, and we do, the one leg balance. We do the close your eyes one leg balance, and that usually, and I mean, I keep laughing because I'm as good or as bad as any of them on any given day. It really does change. And then on one leg, and then turning on that 1 foot balance. And as I say, we've always got fingers ready to be on the chairs. But it's an interesting part of the class, because they know when it's coming, and everybody has varying degrees of success, but they all know how important it is.
Absolutely, I agree. And I'd also like to point something out that you already may know about, but perhaps for your listeners who are not clear on this, we've spent a lot of time in the last, I would say, 10 to 15, maybe even 20 years, talking a lot about fall prevention. That's really a buzzword in the world these days. How do you prevent falls? And I would like to beg to differ on that idea that we don't want to fall. Nobody wants to fall, but we do fall. And we fall for lots of reasons, some of which have nothing to do with our ability to balance. It may have to do with the tree root was exposed and we were looking ahead to the street. And that's not about your balance. That's about that you stumbled over something. And then that could happen to anyone. The other part of the equation that's not, so I don't like fall prevention because that's a fear-based. We're inundated with all the statistics, horrible statistics about what happens when people age and they fall and the catastrophic outcomes that can happen. And I think that that doesn't really help us. It helps people understand that there's a problem, but it doesn't necessarily help them to, they have a love-hate relationship with balance. Well, if you're doing something that's going to help you, why would you hate it? Except that maybe there's fear about if I don't do this, something bad will happen. And I don't think human beings learn really well when it's under fear, under great fear. So what's happening, at least I see in my little world, is that we're moving towards fall resilience. So if you fall, which happens, so we're not preventing falls because falls happen. What we're preventing is the injuries from the falls. So fall resilience means, okay, you fall. Do you know how to fall? Do you know how to fall that you're going to protect your head or you're going to not put your hand out, which is how people get wrist fractures? Do you trust yourself and have you practiced getting up from the ground? Can you do that? And if you can't do that, do you have a backup? Do you carry your phone with you all the time? I mean, do you have a backup to if you needed help, would you be able to get help? So I think that we're a little bit simplistic. I think that's a fair thing to say about the fall prevention aspect of it without taking a step back and looking at the bigger picture of, okay, if you fall now, what? Has anybody taught you how to fall in a way that minimizes injuries? Hard to do at the t in the moment in time, I'll grant you that. And I've fallen. However, it can be practiced. And a lot of martial arts teach falling. It's the very first thing that you learn when you go into a dojo. is how to fall so you don't crack your head on the floor, because that's a bad scenario. And then the second part of it is, our physical activity instructors teaching people how to get off the floor safely. I mean, you see a lot of, okay, so this is where social media is not so good, because you see a lot of these challenges where people have to, you're supposed to be able to get down to the floor with your legs crossed with no hands, and then stand up on the floor with your legs crossed, no hands. And it's like, I can't do that, and I consider myself in reasonably good shape. I'm a yoga teacher. I stretch and I do all the things. But if your hips are tight, or you've had an injury, or you've got arthritis in a hip, it ain't happening. So I don't find those videos to be so helpful, because they're not very inclusive. I want to work with somebody to teach them how to fall safely, or safer might be a better way of putting it, and also teach them how to get off the floor in a way that they're not going to wrench their back or wrench their knee, or that they can actually do, maybe using a chair, maybe using, a heavy table and kind of getting themselves up. So we in yoga class, we spent a lot of time talking about that, but certainly in personal training, we spend a lot of time talking about that. So I have some very strong opinions, and hopefully your listeners will hear that there's more of a nuance in, let's just not get stuck in fall prevention. Okay, nobody wants to fall, I get that. But if something bad happens, how can you take care of yourself to the best of your ability? And a lot of that involves practice, and it also involves knowledge.
Right, yeah. And I agree with this getting up. And it's something, I mean, some of the women in my class are in their 80s and 90s, so I'm not going to regularly make them get down on the floor and get back up again. But they have a few good chuckles over me showing them, how to, in our case, we have the chair right there. So how do you use that chair? Even if you have to crawl over to it or roll over to it or something, like get to the chair. You're just going to fall again, probably, if you're going to try to get up unassisted. You also talk about breathing. Now, there's the mindless breathing that we do all day long that you and I are doing right now. But talk to us about mindful breathing.
I consider mindfulness to be awareness. And in addition to awareness, intention. So there's kind of two parts of mindfulness. There's the actual, what are you doing, and understanding what you're doing and feeling what you're doing, not only the thinking part, but the feeling part, physically, emotionally, mentally. And then there's the intention part, which is slightly different than awareness. Like, can you take your awareness and kind of hone it into something that gives you a path forward? So intention would be something that you want. Maybe it's not here yet, but you have the intention of it. And the intention applies absolutely to physical movement, because there's a lot of folks that don't want to move. They don't understand how to move. They don't know where to get started. They are afraid of getting injured, or maybe exacerbating an injury. Unfortunately, there's a lot of fear, and that's really a shame. A lot of fear around moving our bodies, which already, even in the act of breathing, are moving. And that's the point that I made in the book, is that your body is already put together and constructed of movement, whether that's your heart beating, or your breathing through your nose, or your electrical brain waves, or your digestive system. I mean, there's a ton of movement that's built into this body that we are living in. And so I'm really, it makes me sad, actually, that there's fear and kind of foreignness around movement. So getting back to the mindfulness part of it, I think in general, mindfulness is a really good quality to cultivate for breathing. Like, it's been shown, and this was definitely true in my yoga teacher training, as well as my music training, because I was a wind player, that controlling your breath changes the outcome of what you're doing with your musical instrument or your physical activity that you're doing. So if you're a high-strung personality, or if you're feeling anxious about something, slowing down the breathing and watching your breathing and doing some different breathing techniques can actually change the level of your anxiety. There's some pretty good research these days that breathing in particular can modulate some emotional states. And wow, that's pretty powerful. I mean, because we can all sit here for a second and just breathe through our nose, if that's accessible to us, and just, take a moment and say, wow, I'm alive, and I don't even have to do anything, But when I stop to look at being alive and breathing, that can be pretty powerful. And just, feeling what this breath is and how it comes into our body and how it exits our body. I think it's actually a really beautiful thing to kind of slow down a bit and pay attention. So I hope that answers your question about mindfulness.
Yeah, and about the breathing, because I know if I'm stuck in traffic or I'm agitated about something, anything at all, just to start thinking about your inner self and listen to your breathing, and as you say, that deep breathing, like if you inhale and exhale, you can't help but feel your shoulders come down a little bit. It just sort of seems to relax, and it's a really good start to alleviating whatever has ramped you up.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I would also, as a tip for the listeners, that if breathing is not something that's very accessible to you for whatever reason, doesn't float your boat, or you can't really, you just don't feel like you can control yourself, figure out how your feet feel in connection with wherever they're resting. So if you're in a car, do you have one foot on the floor of the car and one foot on the brake? Well, what's the pressure like there? Where is the weight of the foot? Anything that you can do, I call that ground. Grounding, but anything that you can do to feel parts of your body that you don't normally feel does a bit of the same thing as becoming more aware of the breath. The more aware you can be of yourself physically, it could even be how your butt is in the seat. Like right now, you could say, okay, I'm on the pillow. All right, so how does the pillow feel? Is it warm? Is it cold? Is it soft? Is it supporting me? Am I, kind of on one butt cheek more than another? How does my back feel? Anything that you can hook into physically is a useful practice. So I don't want people listening to this saying, well, I have no relationship with my breathing. I can't even begin to go there. And that's okay. Let's find something else that you can, hook into that will help you.
I'm really appreciating the fact that you're allowing for any amount of enthusiasm, for lack of a better word, on anything, and sort of saying, okay, if that doesn't, as you say, float your boat, then let's look at what might. So that's so important because we're inundated with, as you said, the influencers who say this is the way you've got to do it, and this is the only way to get to the next year, or whatever. If you don't like it, you're not going to do it. So.
That's right. And the way that you're going to do it is to figure out how to work with yourself the best. So yourself, not the influencer, not the influencer's audience, not, your boss. It doesn't matter if it works for somebody else. It matters if it works for you, because we're all individual. So it's super important that you have an awareness of yourself, which maybe that's where you start, is what do I like? What don't I like? What might work for me? Do I need to have somebody that's a professional, guide me in what my choices are? There are a lot of choices out there, and it's really very easy to get overwhelmed with all the choices. So keep it simple and think about doing one thing. So maybe it's your feet that you can hook into, it's your butt you can hook into, or maybe it's just, okay, let me do some shoulder shrugs and let me just see how that feels. How does that feel? What am I feeling? Am I lifting arms? What am I doing? And that's useful.
You just reminded me of, like, during the winter when the women get into my class and they've been out in the cold, and I just did it myself. The shoulders tend to come up around the ears, because you're cold, and just starting out with exactly that of like, let's tune into where those shoulders are. Any part of your body, as you say, if you really tune into it, can you sort of become more comfortable. Now, maybe that's a good way to go into. You had an article on posture that I quite liked. What do you talk to us about posture?
Posture is such a big, I mean, it's like balance. It's a very big topic. So I approach posture from a sense of alignment. And again, alignment, if you have to have awareness. So we can call that mindfulness, as we've talked about that. You have to have an awareness of your body in order to figure out whether or not you're aligned. Although I can take a picture of you and you could probably see that pretty clearly. That's often a much easier access point. So just to clarify the idea of unique individuals, we're looking for your access point. Where, what words, what language can be used that makes sense to you to get you going on what might be good movement for you or good physical activity. So on the posture, posture is not this static thing. Like you don't get into a position and you call that good posture and then that's it, you're set for life. Posture is very dynamic. And again, it has to do with if you've got issues in your body, if you've got maybe scoliosis, if you've got, you know, other kinds of issues that affect your ability to move pieces of you, you may have a posture and you probably will have a posture that looks very different than your posture or my posture. That's fine as long as it works for you. There are a couple of, I would say, general cues. So when I was teaching flute, I worked with adolescent and pre-adolescent young ladies, so teenagers, and they were in the midst of developing as females, and they'd come in and they'd be very hunched. I'm showing a very hunched, caved-in position with my chest. And you may have heard, if you're listening really carefully, you'll hear that my voice has changed. It's gotten a little constricted, maybe a little tight sounding, maybe a little, I don't know, maybe even unpleasant sounding. And then I'm going to lift the top of my chest, so just a little bit below my collarbones, and I'm going to lift that part up and I'm going to drop my shoulders. And I think you can hear now that there's more freedom in the voice. It's not quite as tight and constricted, and there's more maybe flow or resonance to my voice. Was that, Agnes, for you particularly, was that clear to you?
And it was funny because I noticed when you hunched, I did notice the difference, but didn't notice that I noticed the difference, if you know what I mean. So,
Sure.
yeah.
So that's part of mindfulness and awareness, right? Is that, you know, your physical position affects your mental, physical, and emotional health. So when I'm caved in like that because the girls might have felt embarrassed about developing or they wanted to, you know, make themselves smaller, whatever was going on with them that they had that hunch, maybe they carried a 40-pound backpack on their backs for the last, you know, months and years of their, you know, schooling life, and they just had a very forward posture. That's negatively affecting their bodily functions as well as their mental health. You can't breathe as well. You heard it in the voice, but you can't breathe as well when your chest is caved in. So there's some general ideas that I like to give people about posture, and then we have to adapt those ideas to that human being that's in front of us. So for the listeners, one of the general ideas is shoulders down and back lightly, so you're not in this rigid military posture, but you have. I heard this one. I didn't make this up, so I can't claim credit. But I heard someone describe that the way that your arms hang on your body as a hanger. So you have a hanger, you have the bones, that's the hanger part. And then when you put the coat on the hanger, if the hanger is not bent, like our wire hangers, not bent, the coat will hang beautifully. It'll be even on each side and it'll just kind of hang down. So if your bones are your hanger, and then your coat is your musculature over that, it's supposed to hang very easily on the hanger and it'll look gorgeous. You'll know it when you see it, kind of like what you just said. And you'll also know when you see people with posture that doesn't look like that, meaning if their shoulders are hunched up to their ears. And you can hear the difference in my voice right now. I've got my shoulders all the way up to my ears, and you can hear that again. It's kind of scratchy and not very pleasant at all. So I'm going to drop my shoulders, and then now my voice is back to normal, more or less. So it's really kind of startling when you start looking at, you know, bad alignment or poor posture, what that translates into your life. So if you think that you're on a couch watching TV for hours or in a recliner, or at a computer doing stuff for hours, so your chin is forward and your shoulders are hunched and you're just like this, you know, why wouldn't you feel horrible after you get out of that position? So you're in a bed that doesn't work for you, hemmed in by three major, you know, creatures. So you can't roll over, you can't do the things that you would normally do if the creatures weren't on your bed. It's no wonder that you may be, and I'm putting words in your mouth, stiff and tight and, you know, just sort of like, oh, what was that all about? You were like that for 8, 9, 7 hours, however long you were in that bed. It's not going to be, you know, 3 minutes of moving around that's going to counteract that. There's going to need to be some targeted whatever it is that you might like to do for stretching or mobility, a walk, whatever, a hot shower, whatever that means, to get those muscles to loosen up. When you think about how you live your life, if you sit in a sofa for, 3 hours after dinner and don't move at all during that time, and then you go to bed after that, which is sort of a stationary position, and then you get up in the morning, you can't think that a half an hour walk is going to eradicate all the things that just happened. It's good for you. Absolutely. Walking is lovely, especially walking outside. But we have to be maybe just a little bit more, I'll say, intentional about how we use our bodies or not, and then the kind of care we give them after the fact. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And watching you, because we're on Zoom, I can see you. Am I right in sort of encouraging our listeners to try doing some of the things you just talked about in front of a mirror? So, like to bring your shoulders up, and then now that I'm aware of it, you see, I can even feel the difference. I can't hear the difference, but I can feel the difference in my body, or like hunched over or something like that. And that time I heard it, so to do that in front of the mirror and see how it does affect them personally, would that be a good place to start?
Yes. I would say any amount of work that you can do where you're slowly watching yourself, or you have somebody with a phone, somebody you trust, please, somebody that you is going to treat you well, not somebody who's going to criticize, but somebody with maybe a cell phone or something, taking a video view or taking a couple of snapshots. It becomes very obvious, because then you have a little bit of distance watching yourself rather than just feeling it as you're doing it. It becomes very obvious what your particular issues might be. Like, you might be one of the people that have their shoulders up to the ears. You might be a person that, kind of hunches forward. Or even worse, you hunch. Okay, so there's hunching forward, but then there's collapsing through the rib cage down to the, can you hear this voice? This voice is just getting worse, and I'm making myself smaller. So what's also ending up happening is that my upper back is getting very rounded, which is not a position that we want for really much of anything in life. That's a strong statement, but I can't think of too many situations where I want a really rounded back. And you do that as a habitual thing, that's where it gets us into major trouble. So anything you can do that helps bring awareness to what your particular alignment, your typical pattern of alignment is, whether that's good alignment or not good alignment, is useful information, because that gives you kind of a baseline of where you're at. And then there are things you can do to, maybe just bring your shoulders. I used to do this with my flute students when they didn't know that they were making a mistake in whatever they were doing. I'd say, okay, that's a B flat, not a B natural, or whatever the scenario was. And they couldn't hear it. They weren't slowing themselves down, whatever the issue was. And then I'd say, okay, play it wrong. Play B flat, B flat, B flat, B flat. I'd say, okay, now play B natural. And they almost couldn't do it, because it was so ingrained in their brain that B flat was right, even though the teacher was saying it was wrong, because that's the way they practiced it. So what I would like people to take away from that story is that if you're not sure what the heck you do, try what I'm calling bad postures. Bring your shoulders all the way up to your ears. Make it exaggerated so that you can feel it, and then drop the shoulders and go, oh, there's a difference between those two positions. And maybe that's something I want to play with for the next week or two or three, until I know, until I can catch myself, what am I doing? Same thing with the chest caved in. The thing about being on a couch or in a recliner for hours, could you get up every half hour? Every commercial, can you get up? Every 45 minutes, can you get up? Can you have some movement so you're not in sort of in that position for hours and hours? So anything that promotes awareness of how you're using yourself physically, and then maybe exaggerating the bad postures, as long as you're not hurting yourself, exaggerating the bad postures to become more aware, and then do the opposite. Play with the opposite.
Right. Now, another phrase that perhaps we need to use carefully, but I do want to go there, is strength training. And, it does for all those people who are going, oh, I'm not going to go to the weight room, tell them they don't have to go to the weight room.
Wow. So, everybody listening, you do not have to go to the weight room. When pandemic hit, in 2020, and the gyms were closed, which my commercial big box gym was closed for 3.5 months, and you couldn't go to a gym. We made do, and we made do actually pretty well because most of my clients, I was a fitness director at that point when the pandemic hit, but I still had private clients, and most of my clients, I want to say all of my clients, never went back to a gym, and they are strength training with me. So there's so many ways around that. So you can have your own dumbbells at home. You can have your own resistance bands at home. You can have, all the equipment. Well, maybe not all the equipment. You can't have the big pieces of equipment, but you can have enough equipment, let me put it that way, that you can have a very nice strength training program. And strength training, unfortunately, is one of those categories that women, older women, tend to really shy away from. There's something about weight training. And honestly, I'm going to get up on my soapbox for a second because I want us to realize I'm 65 and Title IX, which was you were not allowed to discriminate against, I mean, a bunch of things. But one of the things that the point that I'm making is that public schools had to offer sports in the same way that they offered boys sports. They had to offer it to girls. And sometimes they got around that by offering it as a, unisex team, like a cross country team or whatever. Prior to Title IX, which was 72, and I'm 65. So when I was 12 years old, Title IX came into being. Boys grew up with weight training. Boys grew up with gyms. Boys grew up with bodybuilding. It took a long time after 72 for girls of that age, so we're talking middle school, high school, maybe even college age, to have the same opportunities as the boys. Okay, so let's fast forward. That means I'm 65 and I was right. I did not participate in any team sports in high school because I was in a public high school and the public schools, because they had to come up with the budget for this, were suing to not be able to put the law into place. So they were challenging Title IX. And that took a while to resolve. So by the time I was in high school at 15 and 16, where things were starting to get resolved, it kind of already passed me by. So you think about all the women that are older than 65 did not have the same access to gyms, to team sports, to weight training that the boys did of their age. Now, does that mean that they weren't athletic? No. That just means they didn't have the same opportunities. So if you go and you talk to an 80-year-old and say, okay, I want you to go lift this 10-pound weight, they're going to look at you like you're completely insane and that that's a bad thing. Now, if they've never lifted weights before, it could very well be a bad thing. But my point here is talking about the human body adapts under challenge. And when you look at the way that we live our lives, particularly with going shopping, if you carry shopping bags, they often weigh much more than 8 or 10 pounds. And you have to be able to carry them, lift them, twist while you're carrying them. If you're putting them in the trunk of a car or you're putting them away, you have to lift them from the ground up to the countertop. I mean, that's weight training. Everybody who's listening, you do weight training all through your day. We just don't call it that. And your days will get much easier the stronger you are. And the only way to get stronger is by challenging your body intelligently and appropriately. And that's where you need really good fitness professionals in your life or physical activity professionals in your life. Somebody who can guide you and say, okay, any pain, any problems? No, keep going. You're doing great. And maybe next week you try the 4-pound dumbbells or you try the 6-pound dumbbells or whatever the next intelligent progression is. And the whole Title IX thing, we've done a great disservice in our in there is ageism in fitness, and we won't go deeply into this, but I want women who are listening to this that are 65 and older to consider that there are some very insidious messages against the very thing that I'm advocating for. So the very thing I'm advocating for is women being strong, and you don't have to be in a gym to do that, but you do have to do some work. And you have to do it in a way that's wise for your body, adapted for your body. And that could mean, being in a class with somebody who knows, the group fitness instructor knows that particular demographic of older adults, but also understands how to adapt exercise to human bodies. Because if you stick with 3-pound dumbbells for the next 10 years, you've done yourself no favors because your body will have adapted probably after the first 6 to 8 weeks. and you'll be ready for something that's different. Could you go to 10-pound dumbbells at that point? Probably not. I wouldn't advocate it, but you certainly could go to 4-pound dumbbells. Maybe you don't do as many. This is where I spend my entire life figuring out how to help my clients get stronger within the confines of whatever they're dealing with. So I get very passionate about this whole subject of weight training and strength training because being strong is a really good thing, a really good thing. And we want to be strong and know you won't grow horrible muscles that look like, a bodybuilder. And don't worry about that. You're just going to feel so much better. That's my soapbox.
Well, it's funny that you didn't want to go into ageism because my next comment is about ageism. But I know within my own class, because weights cost money and they were supplied at the beginning. So yeah, most of our weights are between, well, either 1 to I think 5 pounds. But where I've noticed if with my class, and as I say, most of them are in their 80s and 90s, is the resistance bands were mostly the yellow and red, which are the easiest ones. And I just went to my physiotherapist and bought a whole bunch of blue and green, which are the harder ones. And as I look around the class now, it's been less than a year that I've really started pushing these heavier. And they choose their own band at the beginning. But now most of our circle is using the blue and the green.
That's awesome.
And
Congratulations. That's
yeah.
a huge big deal for them and for you that you provided the equipment for them and that they took it upon themselves to realize, well, maybe I can try this. Let me see how this feels. I just think that's fantastic.
Yeah, I'm always so proud of them. They're pretty amazing.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, now the only thing I do want to go to before we're going to touch on ageism, but the snap, crackle, and pop. Some of that is inevitable.
So, well, I mean, I don't know about inevitable, but okay. So a couple of things about snap, crackle, and pop. First of all, I think noises are fine. I have younger people who have noises. I have older people who have many more noises. I have noises. It's not a big deal. And I'm not a doctor. There's the disclaimer, I'm not diagnosing people about their noises. What I've read and what their doctors have told them when questioned is that unless the noise hurts, it's not a problem. Now, it's not for me to say whether that's synovial fluid or that's a structure that's, rubbing against another structure. I mean, no, I can't say that. What I can say is if it hurts or you're concerned, go talk to your medical professional. All right. My experience, which I can comment on for 20 years, is that people have noise. It's fine. Let's make sure the form is good. Let's make sure, I mean, we talked about posture and we talked about the alignment piece. There are exercises where there's certain types of, I use the word form, meaning that there's a certain way to do it that minimizes injury and maximizes the effectiveness of the exercise. And then within that sort of broad construct, then there are individual differences depending on that person's body. So it's really critical if somebody listening to this wants to, understands the value of weight training and wants to go out and get stronger, it's really important that they do their weight training exercises with proper form. And that's where a professional comes in. They don't have to hire a trainer. They can go to a class or they can find a YouTube video. Please vet the person, but they can find a YouTube video, just like you can take yoga classes online or Pilates classes online and start to educate yourself a little bit about what proper form is so that you don't hurt yourself in your quest to get stronger and to be more physically active. We don't want you hurting yourself. That's totally negates the purpose. So I just wanted to add that as a little sidebar. But getting back to the noises, generally there's no problem with noises. It's a little disconcerting, but as long as it doesn't hurt, it's fine.
I used to always chuckle when my children were little that I could actually sneak upstairs, and they never knew I was coming, and yet my knees always went, clickety click, clickety click, clickety click, and I'm going like, how do you not hear me coming? But it worked at the time, so that's not an issue. Okay, we are going to go to ageism for a minute because you've spelled out part of that insofar as our demographic didn't have the opportunity, but even now. For an older person to go into whether it's the weight room, and sometimes just even to go once, as you say, to get a professional to show you alignment, safety, all that sort of stuff. But, or showing up for a run, there's a certain amount of ageism that can be found. It's not always there, but can be found. Talk to us about, go
Oh
wild
wow.
on
So,
ageism. It's one of my soapboxes.
oh yeah, it's my soapbox too. And the reason I didn't want to talk about it is because we'd be here for another week and a half or a month and a half. And as a matter of fact, the second book, which I am working on, is about ageism in physical activity and how it presents barriers. It's a mixed message, right? It's a disconnect. The very things that we're told to do, left and right and up and down, move more, exercise more, get stronger. There are barriers in place, and you just mentioned one, which is I'm going to reframe that and say, feeling conspicuous going into a gym when you're an older person, when maybe in a commercial big box gym. I saw a statistic that 20% of most memberships, gym memberships, are older adults. Okay, that means 80% are not. So if you're an older adult female who's really doesn't have a physical activity, it's January 1st and you're like, I'm going to the gym. Okay, so first of all, bravo. But secondly, that can be a really kind of scary endeavor because if you don't have a long exercise history in your background, and people don't often, or maybe they did things like jazzercise, or they did a dance class, or they did Pilates. They did things that were much smaller and more specific to that discipline. They walk into a gym, and number one, they're overwhelmed. Number two, they see a lot of younger people, and younger people could be 10 years younger than them or 40 years younger than them. It doesn't matter how much, they're just younger people. And they see machines that they don't know how to work. And they just get overwhelmed and they can get frustrated and undiscouraged really quickly. And that breaks my heart because I worked in a commercial big box gym specifically to help people overcome their fear of being there, that they had a right to be there. They had a place in that gym. It was really important, not only for their own physical activity and mental health, but that other people see that older people exercise and can manage a gym environment. And yeah, so I get that people might not want to go into a gym, but let's sit back for a second and say, well, are there other options? Are there other gyms, maybe that are smaller gyms? Are there other senior centers often have some fitness rooms? We've got a very nice one and a lower price point. So sometimes there's a price issue, right, going to these places. But in the United States, at least in the area that I live in, I can go to my senior center with a fitness room and pay $65 for the year as a senior. I mean, that's incredible. Now, is it going to look like the $300 a month gym that's down the street? No, but does it get me started? Yes. And typically the people who work at places like that, like a YMCA, also might be a good scenario. The people that work at those places tend to have, it's a much larger demographic. Maybe it's not 20% older adults, maybe it's more like 30% or 40%. And, I think that people who work in places like a senior center, particularly and or YMCA, might have more experience working with older adults and there might be a different kind of vibe or a different kind of environment in that type of place. So I want people to understand in today's day and age, there are many, many, many ways to become more physically active and to do the kinds of things that you and I have been talking about today. To better your physical health and your mental health, your mental well-being through physical movement. And so they're not stuck with what used to be the typical options. Oh, go for a run. I'm not doing that on the streets of Washington. No, I'm not doing that. No. As a female with, no, I'm not doing that. But I certainly could do something in my home. I've got equipment in my home and I do a lot of my weight training in my living room.
The other thing I will add, and I see it every class at my class, is the social side of that.
Absolutely.
If you're at a place where the demographic is closer to yours, then friendships are made. The women in my class are becoming widows regularly, and I see them at their back like within a week. Because they know it's a safe place. The other women have either gone through it or, that whole thing. And then the other thing that just as you had said, you see the young people in the gym is I've also had people come to me and say like, oh, I'll never get to do it like that. And I love being able to say, And I'm not the supervisor, so that is why I do not correct the other person. But to say, well, actually, they're not doing it in a safe manner. It looks like they're lifting great weights, or they look like they're, like aerobically super fit. But here's what you need to do, and you will actually probably be healthier in the long run than that person who looks like
It's
they're.
a nice distinction. I want to go back about the social connection, so important. And I also want to go back to about the demographic, about being in a like-minded or a similar demographic. There are some real wonderful benefits to that. And there's also wonderful benefits to the intergenerational part of being with other people. So it's both, it cuts both ways. So it's for the individual. And I would never shame anybody or blame anybody or any negativity about someone making a choice that works for them. So if the choice is to start somewhere where it's people that are my age and that look like me, great, if that's what works for me. I also want folks to understand that it doesn't, if you don't have that in your community, it's totally fine to go to an instructor of a class and say to them, okay, this is my physical ability, not my age. Your physical ability has nothing to do with your age. Okay, and that's part of what this book is going to be about, is that we've got to get away from, oh, I'm 65, and therefore that means I have 25 years of exercising in my background, and in exercising that I've gone through periods of, not competitive in that sense, but very intentional, very strenuous kinds of exercising, and then other periods that are less strenuous. And I wouldn't want anybody, if I walked into a class, to look at me with gray hair and say, oh, well, she can't do blah, blah, blah because she's blah, 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 because they'll get me right up in their face saying, listen, no. So people that are listening to this, if it works for you to be in a group that is folks like you, terrific. If that doesn't work for whatever reason, price point or scheduling or lack of being able to get to the facility, don't negate walking into a class that is mixed ages and saying to the instructor, this is what I can do, this is what I can't do. Am I okay to be in your class? Can we adapt? Because it's the burden is on the instructor to say yes or no, or this is what you need. You need to be able to stand for 45 minutes. No, we get up and down from the floor. How's that going to be? You can stay standing. They're the professional. They're the ones that are supposed to adapt for the human bodies that are in their class. It's not on the person to say, I can't do this class because she won't adapt. That's a problem. And not to negate that there can be some really wonderful things to being in an intergenerational situation where we can all learn from each other.
Very good point. Yeah. And I'm just thinking back to my very active instructing days of the number of times you'd know that there was this one person who had this one issue, so you're instructing the whole class and saying, and like they already know they're going to be pointed out because they need to know the adaptation, but to be able to make sure that they're doing it as safely as possible.
Right. I don't want to make it sound like I'm blaming or shaming the instructors. What I'm saying is that if there's a problem, like the person, your class is, it's a fast-paced class, just tell the person that. Let the person give the person the information that they need to make an informed decision about whether to stay in the class or not. And let them know, yes, I can give you a regression or I can give you a modification at this point, but because of the nature of the class, I won't be able to do that. So I'm going to trust that you'll keep yourself safe. If you want to take a break and watch the class, totally fine. Like have them figure out a way that you can convey the information and still be inclusive and gracious. And don't make yourself crazy if you can't give every little modification. So I don't want to put, I said it was the burden of the instructor. I want to be very clear that not every situation you can make every modification. And we're all still human beings and we do our best mostly. So I just want instructors to think about, I don't want them having that fear of, oh, somebody's in their class and that's going to drag down the class or the entire focus is on that person. You don't need to do that. You need to give the person enough information that they can make an informed decision in the moment in time. I hope that's clear because I don't like the shaming part of it.
And it's like everything else in life that everybody has their own parameters, whatever that looks like. Okay, you wrote a book called Mind Your Movement: Six Essential Physical and Mental Tools to Stay Active as You Age. Now, we've been talking about the physical. Talk to us about the mental tools.
So some of this has been referenced in our conversation today. Some of the mental tools have to do with awareness. Absolutely. How can you change anything that you're unaware of? Like, how is that possible? I don't know how that's possible. So if one of your listeners knows how that's possible, tell them to reach out to me because I'd be very interested to hear that. And I'm not being sarcastic. I mean, if I don't think of everything. So if they know something, I would love to get better educated. So awareness is number one. Awareness of self is really critical, really, really, really critical, because you can experiment and you can try different things and you can say, I like this, I don't like that, you know, whatever. And I think that that's really helpful. But I think I'll use myself as an example. I'm a pretty deep introvert. I've learned how to, you know, be somebody that could be up on a stage public speaking. That doesn't bother me. Performing, because I have a long career as a musician. When it comes to do I get energized by crowds, the answer is no. I get energized by one-on-one conversations. So for me to go into a group fitness class with 50 people in the class with really loud music and the instructor screaming at us to do more, do faster, do harder, you know, whatever, that does not work for me. And that's not going to be something that I'm going to really enjoy. So I know that about myself. I mean, I can experiment from time to time, but every time I experiment, the outcome is the same. So if you know that you're a certain way, you want to start looking for situations that best support you. That's part of the mental part. So, you know, if you go to your commercial big box gym, you probably are going to pick a class based on your convenience scheduling, right? What works best for you in your schedule. So I would think that it would be very helpful for you to cultivate some kind of conversation with a group fitness instructor, kind of like what we were saying about the pace of the class, your experience with that class, maybe talking to some of the other members. I'll be the back row person. I'm an introvert. I want to be in the back row. I don't want anybody pointing me out. I don't want anybody reference. Just let me have my experience. I might talk to a couple of people. I might talk to the instructor, then I leave. Other people are front row people. They want to be right next to the instructor. They want to see themselves in the mirror. That's great. We're all different. It's totally fine. But I think knowing things about yourself will help you greatly to find the right situation for yourself. The other point about the mental part is your goals. What are your goals? Why are you doing what you're doing? Which is another level of self-awareness. But if you're not really sure why you want more movement in your life, if there's not a specific reason, kind of makes it harder to determine what the right situation is for yourself or whether or not you need a professional to help you. And a professional could be a personal trainer, it could be a yoga instructor, it could be a group fitness instructor, it could be a physical therapist to make sure that you're going to be okay to do the things you want to do. And it doesn't have to be an ongoing, you know, thousands of dollar investment. It can be a one-off. You can hire a trainer to take a look at your posture or to teach you squat form or to teach you machines, which many health clubs have that introductory. If your listeners don't know, almost all health clubs that I'm aware of in the United States give you an introductory one session. You join a health club, you get this complimentary one session where, you know, they're going to try to sell you personal training more or less, but they'll take you out on the floor and they'll show you some things based on the things that you tell them. So that's your opportunity to learn three or four machines right there. And I would definitely take advantage of that. So there's a number of mind techniques that you can use to help yourself that I tried to include in the book, but I tried to also do broad strokes with awareness and with you know, just like why are you doing what you're doing? Just questioning yourself as to not questioning, like undermining, but just getting clearer about the clearer you can be with yourself about why you do the things you do, that I think the easier that life becomes a bit.
Right. Yeah. It's interesting that I don't know where my brain was going, but it just makes complete sense now that you've explained that. So that's
Good.
great. What haven't I asked you that you want women in midlife, this demographic, to think about? Is there anything we haven't
Oh, I
touched
want
on?
them to know that they are so much more capable physically than what they think they are. I mean, by and large, even clients that have had a double mastectomy, or that have had some, like I said, shoulder, this woman that's headed into shoulder replacement. I've had innumerable clients with hip replacement and knee replacements. And it's not easy. I don't want to paint this as this is, oh, she makes it sound so easy. No, it's not easy. Changes are never easy in life, right? And when they're a negative change, like you've had an illness or you've had an accident, you've fallen, whatever the scenario is, it's not easy to come back from that. It's possible in a lot of cases, but it's not easy. And sometimes it's not possible. So I think the idea of being capable, most women are a lot stronger than they think, just physically and mentally. So, like, the 3 pound dumbbells, I'd really love to see someone try 4 pound dumbbells after, 6 months of doing 3 pound dumbbells. I think that that's something that to look at yourself as being strong and capable is a little different than how society paints older women. And I don't want older women to think to buy into the societal messages that we receive about being frail and weak, because for the most part, they're lies. They are lies. People deal with stuff. I don't want to dismiss that. They do deal with stuff, and sometimes really bad things happen. And there are no guarantees that if you do all the right things, that something bad still won't happen. I mean, I can't. It's not a magic wand. However, if you are strong physically and mentally, your resilience is that much better. So I do want women to think about that. I also want women to think about, in particular, but older men as well, how many different options there are out in the world to move more and to be physically active and to be stronger. That you don't have to, as we've discussed, be in a gym. You don't have to have fancy equipment. You don't have to have expensive shoes. It doesn't have to be an expensive, crazy kind of proposition. It can be a very simple, I go to my, senior center 3 times a week for a weight training class or a dance class or a balance class. But there are options, and they are fairly, I don't want to say readily available, but if you go online, you do a little search, or you ask around, you go to your senior center, ask around, you should be able to find some decent options. And that this is absolutely possible. Like, moving more is absolutely possible. Feeling better in your body, even with some serious stuff that's going on inside you, physically or mentally, it's possible. Exercise, I don't like that word necessarily, but movement has been shown to have wonderful benefits for almost all parts of your body, including your mental health. Even walking outside on a sunny day does a lot for mental health. And you pair that with being outside with somebody that you like, that you're close to, and you're having an interesting conversation, and you're looking at, pretty things, or you're looking at interesting things, that does a lot for your mental health. So maybe that's a third message, is that small steps, haha, small steps are really important to get going. You don't need the grand gesture of the $1,000 a year health club and the fancy shoes and the this and the that. Start with wherever you can start and keep going. The consistency is really important.
Well, at the risk of putting words in your mouth, to listeners, give yourselves credit for, like the fact that maybe that 2 pound dumbbell or something was work last month, and now you've just put a 5 pound bag of potatoes in the cupboard without even thinking about it.
Yeah,
Like,
absolutely.
you walked around the block and you were puffing by the time you got home, and now you're walking around 8 blocks and you're feeling okay. Like,
Right, absolutely. Give yourself, 14 pats on the back. Thank you for mentioning that. And also, say thank you to your body for responding to exercise the way that it's supposed to respond, which is, if you stress your body positively and intelligently, it will respond. And that's it'll respond if you're 90, or if you're, I'm not saying that the women that are 90 or the men that are 90 are going to go out and run a marathon, in 3 hours. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying that if you work with your body intelligently, you can improve it physically and mentally. That's absolutely, you can improve that. Now, what's the improvement? I don't know, but you want to give yourself a lot of credit for even entertaining the idea of improvement. And whatever else you do, but also please give credit to your body for that it'll respond for you.
there you go. Where do we find you on the World Wide Web?
So I'm at Stiff to Fit, which is my website, STIFFTOFIT.com. So there's a number of articles on my website. There's also some on YouTube under Stiff to Fit. There are some videos that people can use for posture and for other kinds of very simple mobility. I have a couple of little yoga practices on the YouTube channel, a standing one and a seated one, if people are interested in that. The book, of course, is available on Amazon. And I'm on LinkedIn also. That's where I live most of my professional life. So there's a number of articles on Amazon, and people can find me, sorry, on LinkedIn under Laura Dow, the lady with the kayak.
Yeah, and that's where we found each other, which is great. Can I ask you a personal question before we close?
Absolutely.
Gonna go out on a limb here because I lurk.
Oh, dear.
Which do you like most, books and reading, or flower and greenery displays?
Oh, I know where you stalked me. You stalked me on my Instagram. What are my choices? Books and reading and greenery and what?
Well, flower or greenery displays.
Well, books and reading.
Oh, okay. I was going to go out and, because you had an interesting selection of books on different pictures, and then I'm thinking, wait a minute, there's a whole bunch of displays here of like interesting, whether it's flowers or I think it was something like a wedding dress in flowers, and then there was some greenery. Some people are so artistic with that sort of thing, and so imaginative that I went, oh, you're obviously sort of interested in it.
What I will say is, I have family members that have their own garden. And so some of the pictures that are on my Instagram are pictures of what they grow in their garden,
Oh my goodness.
which is just like all the tomatoes, those, they grew those in their garden, the dahlias they grew in their garden. But no, it's the books. I love books. I love reading. I love educating myself and learning.
Okay. You had some vacation reads. Is it sort of almost anything will pique your interest, or like
What I
it's not
like
like
to
it's,
read?
yeah.
Okay, so I have professional reading and I have pleasure reading. Some guilty pleasure reading, which I will share with listeners. I'll share with you and listeners. So the professional reading is for the second book right now, which is on ageism and fitness. So I've got a number of books that I'm reading for research and exploration of ideas. People like Ashton Applewhite, people like Tracy Gendron. That's some of the reading that I'm doing. Then the pleasure reading to take my mind off all that stuff are rom-coms. So I have a lot of, and I'm right now I've got some wonderful authors that are with neurodivergent heroines, which I really
Okay.
appreciate. You know, they look at the world differently and they interact in their relationships a little differently. And it's been really wonderful for me to have these authors that are representing different parts of the world and how people think. So, and I've been enjoying that. So that's been sort of August reading, and now we're almost into October. So I don't know what I'll switch to in October.
Okay, that's great. Your website link is in the show notes. All of the links, including your LinkedIn, are on your page at our website. Listeners, we either got you in a yeah or a department today. Talk to us. Leave comments where you're listening, or if you're listening at boomwithabang.com, scroll to the bottom of the page and talk to us there. Was there a question I didn't ask, Laura? Ask it in the comments and I'll get you an answer. Share this episode. I think, Laura, you actually touched on this. Sometimes movement, exercise, being healthier has become an ugly little truth. We know we should, but there's just so many reasons why it doesn't happen. I'm going to challenge you that they probably aren't reasons. Often they're excuses. And one of the biggest truisms about new habits is that you're more likely to follow through with an accountability partner. Share this episode and then follow up with your friends and get at least one partner. It really does work. Do you agree, Laura, on that?
I absolutely agree. Thank you for making that point.
Okay. If you enjoyed this conversation, click the follow button at your favorite podcast platform. It helps us grow. I'm also registered at Substack. Following there is free, and you'll get notified every time an episode is released. A reminder to check out the resource tab at boomwithabang.com. You can look up previous podcast episodes by subject. You can find books written by guests, including today's. Some interesting courses and offerings, lists of age-appropriate job and philanthropic possibilities. And if you're at all curious about the life of a house slash pet sitter, I'm journaling that journey at the website too. Laura Dow, thank you for being my guest today and sharing so many reasons and tips and, just movement, how to do it, why to do it. I really appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Agnes. I always enjoy conversations like this, and I certainly enjoyed speaking with you.
Have a great rest of week.
Thank you.